Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KALW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, icons of all sorts, from disco diva Donna Summer to Ebenezer Scrooge, to an iconic rodent that foretells an early spring or more winter, and an iconic local singing voice in the person of Noah Griffin. Peter Robinson will be talking with him and will also offer us a preview of all things Nutcracker and what's on the cabaret scene. There's also a veritable sleigh full of great holiday concerts in the days and weeks ahead here in the Bay Area. I'll tell you about a few of those as well. Perhaps some tickets as well. Stay with us. Talk about that first icon I mentioned from the touring production of Summer, the Donna Summer musical. Let's meet with two of the actors and cast members, a real-life husband and wife, who play a number of characters that are essential to the life and career of iconic singer, songwriter, and disco diva Donna Summer. Summer, the Donna Summer musical, runs through December 29th at the Golden Gate Theater here in San Francisco. John Gardner has been seen on Broadway in Jersey Boys and A Bronx Tale, has toured with those two as well as with The Lion King as the iconic role of Timon. Lots of regional credits as well. He shares the stage with his wife, Kylie Ray, who sang in the Clint Eastwood-directed movie version of Jersey Boys. She's also been seen in the Broadway production. Like her husband, John, she's been in national tours of that show as well as A Bronx Tale, Rock of Ages, Flashdance, Mamma Mia, Grease, and Fame. Lots of regional credits for her as well. Welcome, Kylie. Welcome, John.
Thanks
for having us.
Happy to have you. Well, first of all, we've got to talk about this. Lots of parallels on your resumes. did you guys meet at one of these shows?
We did. We met doing Jersey Boys, the national tour of it, in 2011.
That's right. And we've been lucky enough to, gosh, this is our fourth show in a row together. So we've Yeah. So, thanking the theater gods.
What stage of the tour did that happen? Saying, "Oh, let's get a coffee together."
Actually, pretty late into the tour, we were almost wrapped up. I would say our true romance started right here in San Francisco.
That's right.
And we closed Jersey Boys here, the first national tour in 2013, right here in San Fran. And so we have a lot of very fond memories of this city.
Nice. So you're sharing some time at a city you know well.
That's
yes.
Right. Only this time we are back with our little almost 2-year-old in tow.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
A thespian
Lots
in training
happened.
Yet? Or are you going to steer him or
yeah.
her away?
God help him. It's great.
Yeah. He's a little actor already.
Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the touring productions. Donna Summer actually did a road production of Hair.
She sure did, in Germany.
In Germany, in Munich.
Yeah, in the 70s, yeah.
She played the part of Sheila, and her parents weren't too crazy about that idea, I understand.
Yeah, she had some very, you know, I don't want to say overbearing, but very protective parents. And then, you know, she was a large family, church-going, and they had some reservations about her getting into the arts and traveling abroad. But obviously, you know, she stuck with her heart, and it worked out pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the general public might think of this iconic diva, born LaDonna Adrienne Gaines, as just the voice of disco, and with good reason. 42 hit singles on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100 in her lifetime, 14 of those reaching the top 10. And she actually claimed a top 40 hit every year between 75 and 1984.
That's the one that really blows me away, is just the consistency on the charts.
Well, let's remind some folks of some of those tunes. MacArthur Park, She Works Hard for the Money, Hot Stuff, Last Dance, what we just heard. I'll Love to Love You, Baby.
I think you need to join us on stage tonight. That's
I think I'd like to catch it.
And I Feel Love, which is huge now with Sam Smith's remix of
So
that's like all over the place again.
It's really interesting how things come full circle and how, you know, her songs, as well as the role Kylie plays, which is Giorgio Moroder, he's having this huge resurgence with the DJ community. And it's wild to watch, you know, as the pendulum swings back to, you know, disco and, like you said,
Is definitely finding its way back into our culture, I would say, through fashion, through music, just kind of, it's all over the place now. So it's just it's a fun era of extravagance and all things glitter and glam. And
we're feeling very topical with our show right now.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, a lot of people don't realize that she wrote a lot of these tunes too.
She did. Yeah, her and Giorgio collaborated on, I would say, most of her material. And she penned most of it herself. And yeah, it was a real trailblazer for the genre.
And she was sort of a songwriter first and a musician. And it was actually my character, Neil Bogart, who's the one who was like putting all the glitz and glam and things like that, that we always joke around that as husband and wife, Kylie and I, she's playing a character, Giorgio Moroder, who formed the music of Donna Summer. I formed the image. So it's 1-2 punch for us.
Yeah.
Well, what was your first hook on this diva for either of you? What?
You mean like what drew us to Donna Summer?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, of course I knew Hot Stuff and Last Dance, but it's only in getting involved to the show where, you know, you're hearing it every night, that to hear the very interesting musicality of like MacArthur's Park, where you're like, wow, this is some intricate stuff.
Yeah, I mean, some of the music is just so exciting to listen to, and you can't not have a great time in the show. I mean, good luck trying to stay in your seat at the end. It's just, it's too much fun.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite things is to look out, you know, when you're first starting the show, because Kylie and I have our first lines together. We're kind of sharing this phone call, and, you know, you could see the first few rows. And there are always, you know, people that arrive there and maybe they're having a bad day or whatever. And to watch them at the end be like standing and literally laughing and kind of dancing, you're like, well, it's a testament to Donna Summer.
And absolutely, that must just feed you as an actor as well.
100%.
I mean, a lot of times it's hard to see the audience, of course, but when you see those first few rows that are just bright-eyed. And,
for sure.
Yeah, yeah. We also need to understand a little bit more about Donna Summer, in that she was quite a remarkable and groundbreaking feminist when it came to the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like I said, she did some real groundbreaking work across the board. She fought, you know, sexism. She fought the record companies. I mean, she was a woman. She was a force, you know. She was somebody that you don't mess with.
And it's interesting because, as sort of an homage to that, or, you know, the concept of the show, Des McAnuff came up with this idea in forming our musical, that he would cast primarily women, even to play male roles in the show.
I was gonna talk about that.
Hence why Kylie's playing Giorgio.
So right, you know, there's 17 women in the show, so it's very, very female driven. I think there's 5 men, 17 women, and
how hard for you, John? It must be tough.
Tough gig. Somebody's got to do it. But all these women, pretty much all their features, their roles in the show, they at least have a feature or two as a male character. And as a woman, you know, we're really never given that opportunity as actors. So it's really challenging and so much fun to kind of sink your teeth into that. And nobody did that. I think, you know, Des was sort of the first person to really put that on the scene. So our director, Des McAnuff.
So let's talk a little bit about the cross-gender casting in the show. Kylie, you do mention that you play Giorgio. Tell about him. Tell us about him.
So Giorgio Moroder, he's a German-Italian man who, he basically was, you know, kind of donned the father of disco. So this was sort of his baby, his sound. This was his world, and he created this whole sound of electric music, electronic music. And he and Donna just, they worked together for years and years, and he created, I think it was Musicland.
Yeah, Musicland Studios.
In Munich, Germany, which sort of became a subdivision of Casablanca Records, which Neil Bogart was the head of.
Yeah, Musicland is now seen as like Mecca, where anybody recording electronic music, they'll try to at least record one album at Musicland in Germany.
Yeah, and the you know, young artists that he's collaborating with now, like Daft Punk, he was, you know, doing collabs with Katy Perry and Lana Del Rey and all these very, you know, topical current artists that, you know, he's not giving it up. So he's still in the game, and he's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And John, you play another integral character in this yarn, Neil Bogart. Tell us about him.
Neil Bogart grew up very modest means in Brooklyn, and after kind of having a failed performing career to start off with, he became like the world's greatest promoter. I mean, was sort of the first one to do music promotion where, you know, more is more. So the lavish parties with like camels and performers. And there's this great quote when we were doing the dramaturgy where they said Neil would spend $3 to make two. And somehow, because of just the right place, right time in the 70s, that worked. And he built Casablanca Records out of nothing.
And she's the one who first saw Donna's talent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely, and didn't just discover Donna Summer, like the Village People, Kiss, Harry Chapin, like these crazy, like different artists. He just kind of had an eye for, I'm going to take that and then, you know, make it explode worldwide.
Mm-hmm. And getting back to Donna, as is so important for the industry, you know, as her star rose, her finances didn't, and she just fought tooth and nail, and she became one of the first women to match her income to comparable men.
She works hard for the money. It says it all.
I don't know if you guys meant to set that up. That was well done.
I wish I had that queued up. Yeah. So this tour has multiple Donnas at various stages of her career. How does that work?
Well, they do. It's another kind of little ingenious concept idea where they break up Donna Summer into three separate actresses. So they have one that plays, you know, the youthful Donna, one that plays what we call disco Donna, and then diva Donna, who sort of also narrates the play.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so it's a way that, you know, we can all recognize that in our lives where, you know, you look back at your childhood and you're like, wow, I feel like that was a different person. So they just made it a different person. Mm-hmm. And I think it works seamlessly in, you know, seeing the progression of this icon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this production runs through the 29th of December. Are you also a part of the rest of the tour?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're here for the long haul. We are off to Seattle.
Seattle for
next,
New Year's, yeah. And then we Tempe, Denver,
up your overcoat,
Florida.
Of course.
What's that?
That's right. Up your overcoat.
And then we head back east.
Umbrella, yeah.
So what's your dream production of traveling as husband and wife?
Gosh.
I know... Like, you want to go first?
Well, I think we've done so many of them. You know, I think every show we do together, we learn something new. And this one is so exciting for me. I get to play an Italian man. I mean, that's not a typecast. No, I have an opportunity right now to, like I said, sink my teeth into something I've never done before. And so I'm kind of just into living in the present and taking what I can from this opportunity and making the most of it. And I get to be here with my family. And I mean, to me, that's winning.
Yeah. And there's lots of like fun roles that, you know, I've thought about, whether it's, you know, the leads in, say, something like Waitress, where like, mm-hmm. you know, people... either a couple on stage or where they're kind of like antagonists.
I'd like to see you guys as in My Fair Lady. And what was the other one I was thinking of? Dulcinea and Men of La Mancha.
Oh, there you go.
You know what? From your lips to God's ears, we'll take it.
Kylie Rae and John Gardner are part of the amazing cast that's part of Donna Summer, the Donna Summer musical. It's at the Golden Gate Theater here in San Francisco through the 29th of December. And they have generously offered, not them personally, but the production company, SHNSF, has offered 5 pairs of tickets for next Tuesday's performance, the 10th. That's at 7:30, and we're offering them to folks that call 415-841-4134. 415-841-4134. Summer, the Donna Summer musical at the Golden Gate Theater next Tuesday night, 7:30. John, Kylie, have a wonderful run, and we'll see you on your next tour.
Well,
thank you so much.
Happy holidays.
Who could not love that music of Donna Summer and the Donna Summer musical at the Golden Gate Theater? The phone's lit up, I'm afraid. We have a full line, so no more tickets are being offered. Well, I mentioned this was a show of icons. The second icon, Ebenezer Scrooge, may conjure up iconic performers of that role like Alistair Sim, George C. Scott, Bill Murray, who also has a connection to today's later guests, Groundhog Day. Scrooge McDuck, perhaps, is your favorite. Kelsey Grammer, Jim Carrey, any of others of dozens over the years on film, TV, and radio. Who's your favorite? But thinking of that character, do you think of Scrooge in love? Well, not necessarily, but that's the premise of the perfect holiday musical at 42nd Street Moon, running through the 22nd. Last time you had a chance to see this locally was in 2016 and 15. But now you'll see that actor, Jason Gray, reprise his iconic performance as the Scrooge you'd like to get to know and love. He joins me in studio once again to talk about his performance as a very different Scrooge. Jason of late has been appearing as the Wizard in the national tour of Wicked, which he's been doing for the last 17 months. Is that possible or even advisable?
It's highly advisable.
All right. As long as you're having fun with it. Yeah, and it sounds like a great show to have fun with. And has been lauded by the New York Times for his manic mischief and was deemed a frisky clown with a real tenor.
And that's offstage.
Oh, yeah, the friskiness, I hope. You may have seen him on Broadway in A Grand Night for singing falsettos, Stardust, Snoopy as Snoopy, and Do Patent Leather Shoes Really Reflect Up? Off-Broadway credits and regional credits abound. TV appearances include Friends, Frasier, 6 Feet Under, and others. And he was in Moon's Little Me, in which he played the 7 roles created by Sid Caesar. He's been heard on many cartoons, and for 5.5 years, he was the voice of Lucky the Leprechaun for Lucky Charms cereal, a balanced part of your breakfast.
It's magically delicious.
Nice. I hope that's still garnering some residuals for you there.
Not a cent.
It was a buyout, really?
Well, as long as I was the leprechaun, I was getting residuals. But now there's a new leprechaun in town. So now I eat only Cheerios.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's wise. Best to switch
over. But I'm not bitter.
You could play the O.
I could be there. Oh, thank you. Big C, little O. Cheerios.
If anyone's listening.
Scrooge in Love is the wildly successful conceit of a musical with music by Larry Grossman, lyrics by Kellen Blair, and a book by Dwayne Poole. The 42nd Moon production is directed by Diane McBride, who also joins me in studio, and who also directed the 2015 and 16 42nd Street Moon Productions. Diane is the education director at Moon School, the educational arm of 42nd Street Moon. In addition to directing, she teaches private voice lessons along with Moon's resident music director, Dave Dabrowski, who is music director for Scrooge in Love and also music director for Groundhog Day, I believe. That's interesting.
He's very busy.
He's a busy
guy. I think my bio is a little different than that because Dave is actually over at Groundhog Day and Ken Brill is our music director.
Oh, right. I misspoke there, but I know he's done work at both camps.
Mm-hmm.
Moon School is now in its second year, I understand?
Moon School is now in its 11th year and I'm
Where am I getting my information?
I don't know. This is my bio from, 2011. No, Moon School is now with Ann Norland as our new education director.
Oh, okay, so I do have you mixed up.
That's okay. Keep going. This is interesting.
Let's see if I get this right. Were you Nurse Ratched in the recent production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? All right, I got one right.
That's correct.
That was up in Napa, and she's trod the boards in many other regional productions, including appearing as Desiree Armfelt in one of my favorite musicals, Sondheim's A Little Night Music.
And she's about to play Dolly Levi in Hello, Dolly, where?
No.
At the Mountain Play.
Nice. Yeah.
How about that?
That should be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to play her like Nurse Ratched. It'll be really interesting.
Perfect.
So in spite of my miscommunications there, welcome to you, Diane.
Thank you. I didn't mean to correct you. I'm sorry. I just want people to get their props.
So let's talk about which side of the boards you prefer. Do you like showing people around and what to do or being on stage in the spotlight itself?
I really like to go back and forth. If I direct, two shows in a row, I find it very necessary to go and do a show. I like to stay connected both ways. I think it makes you a better director when you act. At least it does for me. I understand the process of people and their strengths and their fears, and it's also a lot of responsibility to direct a lot of things in a row. And since I only make my living in the arts, when you direct, I just directed three things in a row. I did 9 to 5, and then I played Nurse Ratched, and then I did Trailer Park, and then I did Scrooge in Love. And I also have a review with my students of Cole Porter, and I need to take a nap.
Well,
I'm tired.
Before you go, you need to talk to the president of the Cole Porter Society, who is in the next studio and is doing a segment before we go. Noah
Excellent.
Griffin.
You're kidding.
That's cool.
Noah with his back to us there. Say
hi, Noah.
Hello. We love Cole Porter.
Yeah.
I think they have different things. I like when I'm acting that somebody else gets to make decisions. But sometimes when I'm acting, I want to make those decisions, and I just have to stay in my lane. So it depends on if you have a really strong director, then it's very easy to act.
Mm-hmm.
And directing is its own special thing. It's really interesting to the psychology of a large group. I always find really fascinating, and I love the design process. And directing is just... there's not a lot of people who direct musical theater. You have to have a pretty specific skill set. So I feel always really lucky to be able to do this for a living. And I get to spend time with humans like this person to my left.
Oh,
indeed. Other than this holdover from 2015-16 on your left, anyone else in the cast similar from the other productions?
Yes.
Jason?
Will Springhorn, who is our
Will. He's a great guy.
Ghost of Christmas Present.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
Don't tell him that.
He's tall, but he's worth the climb.
But I see him. I see him at some auditions at the same auditions I go to. So
do you?
For voice things.
Wow. Yeah. He's amazing. And Brittany Monroe, who's plays Martha Cratchit. And Michael Grasso, who was Tiny Tim, and now he's gotten taller, so he's had to relinquish the crown, the crutch of Tiny Tim, to a new Tiny Tim. But Michael's still in the show,
and a lot of Moon Schoolers who have been with us before. But we took some people from I directed this actually in Napa last year, so we took some Napa people with us, and. But I think people are fitting in pretty well.
Yeah. Right?
Jason's not too mean to them.
I try not to be. It's a different Scrooge.
Well, let's talk about this different Scrooge. We so often think of these iconic characters in their negative incarnations, the Grinch, Scrooge, but thanks to the authors of the original, we should be thinking otherwise, shouldn't we? I mean, we're supposed to think of the reformed Ebenezer, although no one's really named their kid Ebenezer for a while. So, Jason, people will be coming in, I think, with a very different idea of who Scrooge is.
Mm-hmm.
Do you combat or cater to that image?
Well, I try to honor Charles Dickens' original vision, but it is the transformed Scrooge. This is happening a year after A Christmas Carol took place. So Scrooge has become a kinder, gentler beast. He's still got a lot of fire in him. It's not like all of a sudden he just turned into something new, but he's happier. He's more content. He's found the spirit of giving, and he's opened now to being generous to the world around him. And so it's fun. It's fun to have this old guy that we know, but in a new light.
And we are seeing characters as well. We mentioned the Ghost of Christmas Present. How are these characters changed? And you mentioned Tiny Tim's in it, too. So how are these characters updated a year later?
All the characters, the ghosts, come back. And Marley's the first person that comes back, the first ghost that comes back. And he says to Scrooge, "You have done very well this year, Scrooge, but there's something missing in your life."
So here's the premise of the story, right?
Here's the premise. And he takes him back to the party that they've just had at Fred's house, his nephew, Ted Zoldan, by the way, who's back with us.
I just played Fred in an oral version of Christmas Carol.
Oh, cool. So they have the party, and Marley stops the party, and he says, "There." And he goes, "What's your line? That your dance part, because I had..."
"Because you're going through all this, the moans and clanking, the lightning bolt, because I had no dance partner."
Right, and so...
With a British accent.
and so Marley tells him, you have everything, but you're missing this thing. And so all the ghosts come back, and they past takes him and shows him the Fezziwig party and shows him the moment with Belle, and then present shows him the times that they're living in now, and then the Ghost of Christmas Future shows him the end of Act One, which I cannot give away, but it's brilliant and funny. And so that's the premise, is that Scrooge needs to make things right with Belle, and it's heartbreaking and beautiful. And there's some moments in the show, especially the moments that we have two actors playing Scrooge. Jason plays present Scrooge, and we have another actor who plays young Scrooge, and they have a duet with each other which will knock your socks off.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And see, so the premise is a little similar to the Donna Summer musical.
Right.
You know, but it only takes two of us to present the character of Scrooge. They needed three. We didn't have baby Scrooge in our version.
But we have Donna Summer.
We have Donna Summer as the third part.
Oh, nice. And tell us about your Belle.
Belle, Jenny Villieu,
yes,
is
good.
Her name, and she had done it with Diane at the Lucky Penny last year, and she's enchanting. She's so easy to fall in love with. And this is the first time that we've worked together, but...
And the same actress plays Belle, so she'll play her young self, and then she plays older Belle in the play. And I think it's an interesting conceit that they have, that they've came up with.
My range wasn't big enough to play young and old Scrooge, so they needed two characters for mine. But Belle can do it all.
Scrooge in love. That's Jason Gray. He is the old
Scrooge. Oh, and by the way,
Scrooge.
By the way, Jason, it's pronounced Graw, but most people say Gray because there's so many vowels. Let's just be honest.
G-R-A-A-E.
G-R-A-A-E. Graw. I would like to buy a consonant. But my...
Did your family sell off the consonants in the wartime or something?
It was just... It's a Danish thing. Oh. So my father came over from Denmark in the 40s when the Nazis invaded Copenhagen. So anyway, so that's why I have all those vowels, but it is pronounced Graw.
And Copenhagen. Right?
Copenhagen. Copenhagen. I don't know why. You know, really, it's pronounced Copenhagen, but we all say Copenhagen.
Well, you know, potato, you know. Potato.
I say Brussels.
<Just kidding. laughs> Scrooge in Love runs through December 22nd at the Gateway Theater. That's at 215 Jackson Street in San Francisco. You can take part in a discussion Sunday. Get all your burning questions answered about the show you've just seen. It's a fun and informative post-performance discussion with the audience, cast, and crew. And that's hosted by executive directors Darren Carollo and Daniel Thomas, who will share the history of the original production as well as the current incarnation. Those discussion Sundays are this Sunday at the 8th and next Sunday the 15th. That's at the 3 p.m. matinee. It sounds like a wonderful show. In fact, we're going to offer some tickets as we listen to a little mix from Scrooge in Love. Jason Graw, Diane McBride, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us, dude.
Give us a call at 415-841-4134 for some complimentary tickets. I believe we can offer 5 pair through December 22nd at the Gateway Theater here in San Francisco. A great holiday treat for you. 415-841-4134 for Scrooge in Love at the Gateway Theater.
Complain at all. On a regular day, I'd happily say, you're welcome to stay by the wall. But this is not a regular day, with regular errands to run. It's Christmas, so live a little, take a little, give a little. Come, Ebenezer, have a little fun. Have a little fun.
I believe our friend here may have had a pint too many.
Oh, nonsense, nonsense. He's absolutely right. If this were just a typical night, then why should we deck the hall?
On a typical night, we'd let you pretend you haven't a friend here at all.
But, sir, it's not a typical night,
with typical chores to be done.
It's Christmas, so grill a little,
lose a little,
win a little,
try Ebenezer.
Have a little fun. Have a little fun.
I do appreciate your efforts, but...
Poor Ebenezer, shy Ebenezer. There's a lad passing by Ebenezer. Come Ebenezer, try Ebenezer. There's no reason to stand there decaying. The world is merry, musicians are playing.
A touch of Scrooge in Love from the original production. Jason Graw now playing the older Ebenezer Scrooge at the Gateway Theater, part of 42nd Street Moon's holiday offering. Tickets have been taken, so hang up your phone, I'm afraid. We might have a chance to offer some other things as the day goes by. Well, more to come with Peter Robinson. He'll be talking with icon Noah Griffin. We mentioned a show of icons. Our third icon is sort of rodential in nature, and it owes its incarnation to the iconic Bill Murray, who portrayed the lead character of weatherman Phil Connors in the 1993 Harold Ramis-directed film Groundhog Day. The theatrical adaptation of the film has a score by Tim Minchin, who also authored Matilda the musical. And the San Francisco Playhouse production is directed by co-founder of the Playhouse, as well as a frequent onstage actor, Susie Damolano, who's been my guest here on Open Air several times. This production marks the Bay Area premiere of Groundhog Day, the musical. You may recall from the film that the comedic plot revolves around the cynical big city weatherman, Phil Connors, who reluctantly reports on the small-town Groundhog Day ceremony in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, until he finds himself reliving the same day over and over again. In this theatrical production, the Bill Murray role is brilliantly taken over by longtime Bay Area actor Ryan Drummond, who was to be in studio today, but I'm afraid he is protecting his voice and needs to keep his chops up for the show. So Ryan was being joined instead by castmate Rinabeth Apostol, who plays Rita Hansen in the production. She was recently seen in the Playhouse production of King of the Yees, as well as in productions at Magic Theater, California Shakes, Capitol Stage, Seattle Rep, Berkeley Rep, ACT, among others. She's also been in many commercials and independent films. Renabeth, welcome.
Hi, nice to be back.
Sure, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Ryan's character, and then we'll talk about yours. The difficulty for Ryan must be making this character likable, because he's kind of a dick.
I think that kind of is the recurring theme. We've had several people say this ties into the Scrooge character, that he is partially Scrooge in this retelling of the Christmas carol.
Yeah, and he goes through this Dickensian transformation, and it's very appropriate for the holiday season because it tells that age-old tale. Very clever use of props. There's miniaturized versions of vehicles that are pushed around.
So many props.
It's a lot going on. And the choreography is just over the top.
Yes.
Who did the choreography?
Nicole Helfer is actually our choreographer. And she, you know, it's always different when you are putting something on stage for the first time regionally, because not a lot of people were familiar with the show, which gives us a lot of free rein. But Nicole, I think, was able to really pinpoint the important aspects and even the repetition of the choreography and the storytelling, I think, is just really lovely to watch. And our ensemble works their butts off.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. So let's talk about your character, Rita.
Yes, Rita Hansen, originally played by Andie MacDowell in the film. She is the producer, associate producer, who is sent to work with Phil on this lovely Groundhog Day. And to both his and her surprise, they end up falling for each other. And I think working with Ryan has been absolutely just a boatload of fun. I think once we've finally settled into what day it actually is, we've settled into the characters really well, and it's been wonderful being able to relive it.
Yeah, well, speaking of reliving it, the major premise of the show is the repeating of the day of Groundhog Day over and over. And yet the authors of this show really cleverly concatenate those overlapping days, so the audience really gets some of the details that may have been overlooked in the earlier versions of that same day in those scenes.
Right, and the actors on stage as well sometimes. I will have to say, you know, there are theories out there that say this, if you actually count how many possible days there would be, it would be a span of 12 years. So 12 years is a long time to relive the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But it is true. You watch the show and you pick up on different things. And I think also lyrics-wise, a lot of the songs, if you have the opportunity to watch the show twice and really listen to Tim mentions them, superb lyrics, and they're quite funny. I think it's something worth repeating.
Right. And we also need to give, of course, a shout out to Susie D'Amelano, who directed the show, as well as the beautiful scenic design on the turntable set by scenic designer Edward Morris.
That is true.
That must be a challenge to get around, though.
Oh, the turntable. It is a challenge, but we've finally found which tracks make it work. We know our traffic patterns now, but it is quite like being on a treadmill, depending on the speed.
Right. The show runs actually through the 18th of January, so you got a nice long run here.
Yes, we do.
Groundhog Day, the musical, it's having its San Francisco debut, and it's the premiere here, directed by Susie D'Amelano. Renabeth Apostol, the key Rita Hansen in the production. you can, let's offer some tickets for this as well. Why not? We'll have three pairs of tickets for some point during the run between now and the 18th of January. Give us a call at 415. Another opportunity for tickets, 415-841-4134. Our trusty producer with a smile on his face will take your name and phone number, 415-841-4134. Well, let's go with five pair nails. Lines are lit up, and I'm sure Susie will approve of that. Rita, thanks for coming in. We wish you a great run, and give Ryan a gentle hug and a nice cup of warm tea.
Will do.
We'll sure to have him on at some other point.
Thanks so much.
Well, our final icon of the day is someone that I'm pleased to count as a good friend. Great cabaret artist, president of the Cole Porter Society here in San Francisco, Noah Griffin. I'm also pleased to call him a brother. He is Open Air's regular contributor and critic at large, Peter Robinson's guest, for a talk about the cabaret scene in San Francisco, as well as his own show in Marin, which is an evening of live musical cabaret at the Lark Theater in Larkspur to celebrate New Year's Eve. And Peter will also preview the San Francisco Nutcracker's 75th year of doing Nutcracker here in the Bay Area. Peter, Noah, take it away.
Okay, here we are. And did we have Ella Fitzgerald in Chicago, or did we leave her in Chicago?
I think she's still in Chicago.
Okay.
Might have brought her to Manhattan.
Right, or Manhattan for that matter. Okay. Anyhow, when I think about cabaret, I do think about the kind of torchlit room, the quiet piano, and then as the voice, to me, it's Noah Griffin. So, Noah Griffin,
you're
welcome.
You're very kind. Thank you
welcome
so much,
this
Peter.
Evening.
It's a pleasure to be here.
And we're going to talk a little bit about a show which is opening on New Year's Eve, a special New Year's Eve presentation of Pal Joey, the real story about what was in the stage version a dancer played by Gene Kelly, and then in the movie, of course, Frank Sinatra.
I'm so surprised. You know, he does a good job at dancing. He started off in Anchors Away with Gene Kelly, but he's certainly known as a singer, and as he pointed out to me earlier, that they shifted the role more of a singer than a dancer, suits him a little bit better.
And actually billed second on the Billboard at the time.
Well, he didn't. He said it wasn't bad to be sandwiched between Susan Hayward and Kim Novak.
Novak, that's right, in the right place at the right moment, and sit still and let it all happen. So in your pre-movie presentation, which is a cabaret evening.
Correct.
Which songs are you going to be performing?
Well, I'm going to be doing Where or When, and there's a great story about the Godfather's emissary that goes up to the bandstand and says, Godfather wants to hear Where or When. Either one. And then, of course, we'll be doing the other song, Falling in Love with Love, which is a great three-quarter tempo waltz.
Right.
Oh, one of my favorite tunes.
Isn't it great? It's a wonderful song.
Mm-hmm. And your backing is a quartet?
We'll have a trio. Cesar Cancino has put together a trio. And we have a quartet of singers,
right.
Mark Robinson and Desiree Goyette and her daughter Lily. And it's going to be fun. I've worked with Desiree many times before, and Lily, because our focus with the Cole Porter Society is to bring the youth in, and she's really quite talented. And Mark Robinson has worked with Desiree doing a Frank Sinatra show at the Cinnabar Theater up in Petaluma. So it's going to be a nice quartet of singers.
And when the quartet do their numbers, which ones are they going to be performing?
We'll be doing Mountain Greenery for sure, and not Falling in Love with Love. We'll be doing Mountain Greenery and With a Song in My Heart, which is really something that will.
And of course, one of the songs from the show is a Small Hotel. I think I'm right in saying that.
You're right. We were slipping in rehearsal, and there's a Trump Hotel, but it's actually just a small hotel.
A small, friendly hotel.
Yes.
I think that's the key word there. Yeah. Now, looking back to the actual movie itself, they changed the ending, if I remember, from the original stage version. And at the end of the movie, off they go, hand in hand, Pal Joey and... what is the name of the lady that he finally goes off with?
Vera Vanessa, the Andressa?
Right, that's right. I wanted you to say it, not me. I wanted to get that bit right.
Keep yourself pristine.
Okay. And I think back to, you know, the era of Rodgers and Hammerstein, Rodgers and Hart,
yes.
Really the golden age where musicals were the entertainment of the day.
Yes, they were kind of really the era kind of took off with Jerome Kern. But the two of them, Rodgers and Hart, were put together at Columbia University. Hart was born in New York in 1895 and sent to Columbia Preschool and then went on to Columbia University where he met Richard Rodgers. And they combined over the next 20 years. They did at least 26 musicals together. And a lot of people like them a little bit better than Rodgers and Hammerstein. Hammerstein's lyrics to some are a little too treacly, but I enjoy both of them. But interesting enough, with Hammerstein, his last big hit was Showboat. And if this hit in 1943, which he collaborated with Rodgers after pretty much Hart was out of the picture, if that wasn't going to be a hit, he was going to hang it up. And think of all the wonderful music we would have lost out on had not they been able to collaborate until his passing.
And I think also with this, in fact, it was the last big star performance of Rita Hayworth. She would only have one more movie, I think it was with Gary Cooper in 1959, called They Came to Cordura, which of course was a Western. But this was her last major.
Oh, major, because I think she had another one that was made, not I Want to Live. I think that was another big one for her. But both Kim Novak and Rita, neither of them sang, so they had their musical roles dubbed in the movie.
And talking about both cabaret and performing, here in San Francisco, I know last year you were at the Golden Gate Yacht Club.
Yes, we do programs there once a quarter that are open to the public. And oddly enough, the exterior of that Golden Gate Yacht Club is in the movie Pal Joey. It's right on the Marina Boulevard, right down from the St. Francis Yacht Club. And they're wonderful exteriors in the movie. The ferry boat coming in 1957, when they still had cars on the ferry boat. The International Settlement, which is down close to the Barbary Coast. Wonderful shots of that. And the Spreckles Mansion, of course, is there, which is Danielle Steele's home now.
And they moved the story to Chicago, from Chicago to San Francisco.
Right.
Because the original was in Chicago, the original story.
Correct, John O'Hara's novel.
Now, when you're performing cabaret, because cabaret has a wide series of both history and tradition, what are the kind of guidelines if you want to be a cabaret performer? What would be your advice?
Well, you have to sing conversationally. And the conversational singers came in with Sinatra and Bing Crosby when you had the advent of the microphone. You didn't have to have a big operatic kind of voice. And you remember that you're telling stories. People want to hear stories. And the other thing to remember is also you don't necessarily have to engage every single person in their eyes. Some people don't want to be engaged. So you look over their heads and they think you're still looking at them. And the other trick is somebody might be having a bad day and they may be having nothing to do with you. And they're not into it. And you think, oh, my God, I've got to really sell this on to that person. Move on to the next person. So keep it positive.
And also sing over the tinkle of ice at twilight. You
know? Well, the only thing I sang at Mason's at the Fairmont for 6 months, the only thing that would bother me if I'm singing a song and I've got a nice slow note at the end, the whir of the mixer machine or the banging of the dice cups.
or the espresso machine. That can really turn your...
Well, I was singing with the big
band.
You're
no longer the cream of my coffee anymore when that happens.
Well, I sang with Walt Tollison for 10 years, and one thing I learned the hard way, I was holding a note at the end, and all of a sudden I decided to do something with it. He looked at me and he glared at me and went, what did I do wrong? I sat down and I realized as long as I held that note, he could do a beautiful obbligato with the trumpet. But if I did something, like I broke the contract with him. So I never forgot that, never did it again either.
Yeah, well, I always think the improvisation in any jazz quartet decides whose ego is biggest.
Well, you know, they used to have cutting contests, you know, who could outdo the other one. But when you're a singer, if you're a really good jazz singer, you just become another instrument. And that's some of the things I think the really good jazz players resent when the singer thinks he's the only part of, or she's the only part of the ensemble. You're not.
And if you think back to cabaret performers who've influenced you or guided you, who would you put on your list?
Well, I was told when I was coming along to listen to women, female performers, because if you pick up something they do, nobody's ever going to say, you're trying to sound like Ella Fitzgerald. So I would love Ella, but the people that I love who are male performers, I love Nat King Cole, I love Frank Sinatra. But Sinatra did not consider himself a cabaret singer. He considered himself a saloon singer, which is interesting, the contrast. But it's good to study people you like, but not so closely that you try to imitate them, because there's only going to be one Sinatra, only going to be one Nat Cole. When I was a kid growing up, Johnny Mathis was 10 years ahead of me in school. I went to school with his youngest brother, Mike. And I thought, oh, gosh, I wanted to sound like Mathis. But somebody said, you know, there's only one Mathis. Sound like yourself. And mm-hmm. Oscar Wilde once said, "Be yourself, everybody else is taken."
Right. And I don't want to be too patriotic, but I want to put a plug in for Noah Coward, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yes.
particularly Noah Coward in Las Vegas, where what you were saying at the beginning, that it was as much talking as it was singing. And in terms of storytelling, most of his songs definitely had a story running through the lyrics all the way through, and frequently a punchline at the end. But I think he was in some ways different to the American Torch song.
Yes. Also, picking your song which has a story that you can relate to. My mother used to say, put that song away. I said, why? I like that song. You haven't experienced it, or you can't relate to it. It's like a 22-year-old trying to sing My Way. It just doesn't work. You haven't lived enough to be able to put something into that song. The other thing you have to remember is to keep a little something back. I remember singing a song at the Sea Witch in the old days of Ghirardelli Square, and I thought, I'm not really adding enough to this song. So I added some things personal to me in the song. I wound up tearing up and had to walk off the stage. And somebody said, that phony. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'll never give that much to a song again. I'll give so much, but no more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think of one particular Noah Coward number where he was on an ocean liner and a mother had come up to him and wanted advice to help put her daughter on the stage. And he actually wrote the song, Don't Put Your Daughter on the Stage, Mrs. Worthington. And it became a reality. So when you're speaking about injecting your own life into the story, it mm-hmm. kind of ties in with relating emotionally something from the past, which you're now going to present in the present.
That's right.
But on the other hand, tearing up on the stage, it can be a mixed blessing, so to speak.
Yeah. Right, and you see performers that give so much. It's kind of like actors, basically. That's what they claim Belafonte was. His voice wasn't all that great, but he was an actor in song. So part of it is acting, and part of it is knowing how far to go and then how far to go. You can't give everything, or else mm-hmm. you're just... Bernadette Peters, whom I really like, but I remember she had one particular song, and at one measure, every time she sang the song, a tear would come down from her eye.
Oh, now, that's beautiful. Yeah.
It was and it wasn't. I mean, right. How real was it, actually?
Yeah, yeah.
But your audience appreciates
it. Don't cry for me, Argentina. But I think with Harry Belafonte, in terms of storytelling, he really was the master of the calypso.
Yes.
And I think about songs like I'm Sad to Say, I'm On My Way, I Won't Be Back for Many a Day.
My heart is down, my head is turning around. I had to leave a little girl in Kingston
Town. And I think there is that connection of bringing a person's nationalism, in his case Jamaica, into another culture and letting the experience be a richer and learning experience from that point of view.
Both he and Poitier spent a week at my college for the 100th anniversary. It was interesting. At the beginning of the week, all the women were totally enamored with Poitier. By the end of the week, it totally flipped. It was Sidney Poitier. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back just to wind up with Pal Joey. The show is opening on New Year's Eve.
It's at opening and closing the same
opening
night.
Opening and closing. That's a rapid turnaround. It's at the Lark Theatre, which is in Larkspur in Marin County.
On Magnolia. And it's $75 if you want to have dinner before at the Left Bank restaurant, either 4:30 or 5:30. $35 for the show only. $30 if you're a member. And any time after Christmas, all seats are $40. And you can find them online at thelarktheatre.net. And it's wonderfully directed by Ellie Mednick, and we're on the Vicky Solier stage.
So just in terms of the cabaret, you're on before, and then they're going to run the movie afterwards?
Right, they'll run the movie. We're on between 6:30 and 7:15, and then at 7:30 they'll run the movie. And that it'll be over on time for the ball drop from London.
So, oh, there you go.
We could have chosen Chicago, but I knew I was going to be on the show with you.
Okay. Now, I think we were going to play a little bit of Christmas music just before I talk about the Nutcracker. And here we go, Noah giving us, and what's the song?
Winter Wonderland.
Okay.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow is glistening. a beautiful sight. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is the bluebird, here to stay is the new bird. He sings a love song as we go along, walking in a winter wonderland. In the meadow we can build a snowman and pretend that he is Parson Brown. He'll say, are you married? We'll say, no, man, but you can do the job when you're in town. Later on we'll conspire as we dream by the fire, to face unafraid the plans that we've made, walking in a winter wonderland.
From a holiday CD issued by the folks at the Cole Porter Society, Noah Griffin's Turning Minds to Vines Worldwide, it's benefiting Roots of Peace. Thank you for planting the Roots of Peace, Noah, and thank you for this beautiful CD.
Thank you.
What is Roots of Peace? Tell us about that.
Roots of Peace is an organization started by Heidi Kuhn. They go all around the world eliminating landmines and planting vines. After Princess Di died, she had the idea, and she's 20 years now. And she recently was awarded the Mahatma Gandhi Annual Award for Citizens of the World.
We'll add a link to our website, not only for the Cole Porter Society, but for Minds to Vines as well, rootsofpeace.org. Thank you very much, Noah. And I should say that I'm going to thank you in advance for hosting guest hosting Open Air next week.
I'm so looking forward to it and so privileged and thankful. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming in. Peter, we've got some Nutcracker coming up.
We have it. Yeah, talking about a winter wonderland, I think the Nutcracker really fits the bill. This is the 75th anniversary of the San Francisco Ballet. Of course, it's based on the 1882 Tchaikovsky piece. And it is a very, very special performance this year. They've got a book specially designed as a souvenir for the whole of the performance. It is the dazzling San Francisco Ballet. And it is, in my opinion, a magical wonderland. It's something, a way of introducing young people to great music. It's introducing the whole family to wonderful dancing and performances. And at the same time, I think it's a great night out. If you're into costumes, there are 150 different characters on stage at different points, from Clara to the Nutcracker to the Prince. And then you've got the mice and the fairies and the Snow Queen. There you are. What more need I say? And they open on December the 11th, the Nutcracker. It's a must for you. Go see.
Indeed. Thank you, Peter. And next week I'll have a pre-recorded segment with one of the musicians from the fantastic ballet orchestra to include as part of Noah Griffin's presentation of Open Air next week. And speaking of things to do in the Bay Area, so many right now. Just one more chance to see the delightful Hansel and Gretel this Saturday at 7:30. Sasha Cooke and Heidi Stober in the lead respective roles, with another great turn of gender, the witch, played brilliantly by Robert Brubaker. Christopher Franklin conducting the sumptuous score with the opera orchestra at their finest. Lots of San Francisco symphony activities, including performing live to It's a Wonderful Life, the iconic Jimmy Stewart film. Andrea Bocelli with the San Francisco Symphony is at the Chase Center tonight. Holiday gaiety with Edwin Outwater and Peaches Christ on Saturday, Mariachi Christmas, all at sfsymphony.org. The San Francisco Bach Choir presents Journeys by Candlelight, Christmas Near and Far, this Saturday at Calvary Presbyterian. Christmas in the Mission with Community Music Center Choirs is also on Friday at 7 p.m. And the wonderful Bach Christmas Oratorio and Cantatas 4, 5, and 6, as well as the Magnificat in D, part of the San Francisco Choral Society's 30th anniversary season. Robert Geary on the stage there. That's tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to the extremely hardworking producer, Neil Swinkle, manning the telephones as well as producing Open Air. As I mentioned, Noah Griffin will be sitting in as guest host next week. And the following week, Leah Garchik sits in for me. I'm going to take a little time for a slight surgical operation on my shoulder. Wish me luck on recovery on that one. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. You can contact me. I'm David at kalw.org. Thanks so much for listening.